Lamentation, Psalm number 348.
Appreciate everybody being here this morning. Sunshine, beautiful weather. It's outside yesterday, and as I was trying to think of a way to get Eli and John excited about working yesterday, so I said, this is team building. And so we team built it, and we tore down things yesterday and got to enjoy the sunshine. Hopefully you all did too. And we're doing, a few weeks ago, I don't know, maybe a month ago now, I gave a lesson talking about when controversies arise. And I try to lay down some principles of that lesson about what it is we need to think about, what we need to concentrate on when there's issues or divisions or problems that develop among brethren. And this lesson this morning probably doesn't really fall exactly in that category, although it is one that may be becoming more controversial, especially with the world around us. And as we want to talk this morning about marriage, you start off in the Bible and you realize that God's law of marriage is very simple, really. And yet we find very quickly, in fact, after Adam and Eve and Cain, that you find by the time we get to Genesis 4th chapter, verse 19, you read there about a man by the name of Lamech. And in verse 19 it says, Lamech took for himself two wives. And then gives their names. And that's really the first time I read about man really deviating from God's law on marriage, having two wives. Now, of course, we go through the rest of the Bible, and we have all kind of examples of that occurring. And we can stop and just think about, of all people, David. And we think about David and his adultery with Bathsheba, but also the fact David has six wives, I believe it is. And then we can read about Saul and all of his many wives and his concubines he had. And we read all through the Old Testament eventually how Judah and Israel both simply put away their wives for any reason and married other people and go in the New Testament. And we have the question, of course, of Jesus about divorce. And all of that stands for the fact that man has, for various reasons, found it hard to keep God's law in marriage. And so I thought this morning what we need to do is really take a look at this from a point of view of taking another look at marriage as far as really what the Bible talks about. And a lot of what I'm going to say today, you have probably either heard at a wedding or we have served her before in other lessons. I'm not trying to be original all today. But I think we need to make sure we understand where we're coming from in this issue. Because sometimes I assume people understand things and I may be wrong about that. And so the first thing we want to understand about marriage, it is a divine relationship. As we had read for us a few minutes ago, there in Genesis 2, verse 24, it said, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother, and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And they were both naked, the man's wife, and were not ashamed. And of course, Genesis 2nd chapter really is related to Genesis 1st chapter, because in the 1st chapter we find in the first chapter, verse 26, 27, that God made man and woman and made them according to his image, it says. And really, the second chapter of Genesis, as far as Adam and Eve's relationship to each other, is more of an explanation of why God made woman then and the relationship between those two. And so we read this passage here, we understand this was the first marriage. The first man and the first woman, and as you look at this passage then, you realize then that really Genesis is from the very beginning. As far as the marriage relationship, that's from the time there was man and woman, God created this relationship between them, those two people. And that means then that marriage is not a product of society. It's not a product of social evolution. Maybe that's another way of saying it. That you hear people talk about evolution and talk about marriage, a lot of times you hear this whole idea that really the cavemen, at some point, that they would, you know, you had packs of people running together or living together, but sometime in that process, men decided to start pairing off with a single individual female, and that was probably for the survival of the species so that they could take care of the children a little bit better, and there may be various evolutionary reasons why that happened. And I just think we have to keep in mind that it's not a product of evolution. It wasn't a product of social evolution. That this is a divine relationship. created by God in our society. Therefore, it's regulated by God and our society when you think about it. And as you look this year, we have to keep in mind that this is a relationship when it says, as becoming one flesh, and they were both naked, and man's wife were not ashamed, and that this is, again, a relationship entered into by man and woman. As you look back there in that passage, when it says in Genesis 2, verse 26, a man and his wife, and that part of the problem that we have today in marriage is a lot of times it's so easy to get married, people enter into it without realizing the responsibilities they have in the marriage. And that there's times people maybe glamorize marriage, idolize that idea of getting married, and decide they want to get married, and then you realize that this person may not really think about the fact of the responsibilities they're taking on. That means that somebody has to work, and somebody has to take care of babies when they come along. And you have to work together to do those things. And you have two people that have grown up in our society today. When our children grew up, how much of the emphasis do we place on our children and providing for them, taking care of them? And they kind of become the center of our universe. And they eventually start thinking of themselves as being the center of the universe. And then they get married and you tell them, now you got to think about somebody else. That's not the way they're brought up a lot of times. They're brought up thinking about me and what I get out of things. And now all of a sudden they have to think about somebody else. That's hard to do. And so it is a relationship where the man and his wife are to be people that are willing to take on that responsibility. Getting married, realizing that it's not always glamorous. And not only that, but also it is a relationship that basically look at is a relationship that enters between two people of the same sex. Not only is it not between a boy and a girl, which is the first point I was trying to make there, but second thing is not between two men or two women. Now again, we see that more and more today talked about in this relationship. But that's not the way God designed it. And so we have to keep in mind God's purpose for marriage, God's design for marriage, as you look through this. And as you look at this, also it points out to us that this relationship, as far as because of sexual immorality, that is, inside the marriage relationship, you have the special sexual relationship that is allowed by God, but outside that relationship, it is not allowed. In 1 Corinthians 7, verse 2, nevertheless, because sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, let each woman have her own husband. And so many people today think that the marriage relationship is kind of passe or simply that it is kind of so outdated that they decide, you know, we can live together and not be married and there's no real consequence to it. Now I want to draw your attention back to that passage, Genesis 2, verse 25. And there it said that they were both naked and were not ashamed. And look at that and think about it. Now that's talking about the sexual relationship between the two. But also what that tells me is that this is a very intimate relationship. And in fact, the marriage relationship is the most intimate relationship that you're going to enter into as far as between two people or should be. It is not intended to be a casual relationship. And again, if you treat it as a casual relationship, bad things happen. How many times have we heard in the last number of years cases where maybe a young man, young woman start living together or they have a sexual relationship with each other, and because of social media, because of the idea of texting each other or sharing pictures of each other, things like that, and then one of them decides to break off the relationship. And the other person now has all this intimate information about you, and they're upset, and they decide to share this with other people now. They don't get back to you. So they share this with all their friends. They share this with everybody in school. They share this with everybody on the internet. And then the other person is devastated. They're hurt because how could this person do this? Well, again, yes, that person is a crummy person. They're a rotten person doing that. But you have to realize that there are consequences to this intimate relationship that's not to be felt with anybody else. And when you break that rule, you're going to have these kind of consequences. And so it is a relationship that, again, is intimate. And God said in this relationship, that's where the sexual activity is allowed, but not outside the relationship either. And as you look at this here, also when I see this divine relationship, I see that it's a relationship that's entered into. And that is that people get married. People enter into a marriage. It's not a case where you're walking down the street and one day you just realize, you know, I got married. I don't know how that happened. I was walking around and suddenly I'm married. No, when I look at the Bible, I see various passages that says that some kind of activity, some kind of action was required for people to get married. Now again, some of this was based on society. It's what did that society require of them? And some societies, it may have been simply jumping on the broom. In some societies, it may have been going to this town magistrate and telling the town magistrate to report us being married. In some societies, the just society, there are certain things required of them. But I look through the Bible, I see passages like this here in Luke 20, verse 34. And Jesus answered and said to them, the sons of this age marry and are given in marriage. Okay, it makes a some point here. This is the question about the woman who had been married to seven brothers, whose wife was being resurrected. But just notice at one point, he said, well, we enter into marriage. We get married and we enter into marriages. When I look at 1 Corinthians 7, verse 28, the question about marriage and due to the present distress, you have a young virgin, it's okay for her to marry. You say, well, it's bad because of present distress. Not to, but notice verse 20 says, but even if you do marry, in other words, even if you do enter into a marriage, you have not sinned. And he goes ahead and explains some of what he's talking about there. And so what I see in this passage is that while there is not a prescribed marriage ceremony, I don't find any place in the Bible where God said, these are exactly the words you have to say in a marriage, to get married. What I do see is that there were marriages. And Jesus, in fact, talked about wedding feasts. And so we know they had those, and so we know they had weddings. And so there was a way that they enter into a marriage. And so there is here also in the, by this, is a relationship between a man and a woman. And notice here in Deuteronomy 22, verse 28. Because sometimes people may say, well, if you just start living together, you know, aren't you really married? If you start having a sexual relationship, aren't you really married? Well, no. In this passage in verse 20, it says, if a man finds a young woman who is a virgin who is not betrothed, and she seizes her and lies with her, and they are found out, then the man who lay with her shall give to the young woman's father 50 shekels of silver. So just stop right there and realize what it's talking about. Is they have two people, a young man, and maybe he overpowers her, or maybe she's a willing participant. Now, the law generally was what? The law generally was they would be stoned, sexual immorality. But if they're not betrothed, not married to anybody else, then in that case, he's to give her father 50 shekels of silver, and then she shall be his wife. And what that tells me, just because they were involved in sexual relationship, did not mean they were automatically married. It's not, the wedding bed is not the marriage ceremony. And so you have to think about that, because he has humbled her, he shall not be permitted to divorce her all his days. And there's limitation on that. But there's a process, again, of entering into a marriage that the law of Moses talked about. And so when we look at this divine relationship, first of all, we understand there's the intent of marriage. That is, man shall leave his father and mother. And then also abiding by whatever it is that society says, and God's law says about entry into marriage. What needs to be done to enter into that marriage? A second thing about marriage is that marriage is a scriptural marriage, one where God binds them together. And that is, in marriage, you have three parties involved. You have the man, you have the woman, you have God. And as you look at that here, the man and woman, that's the human activity there. That's where you say, ask somebody, will you marry me? And the other person says, yes, I will. And you make the arrangements to do whatever is necessary to get a marriage license. That's human activity. But there is God involved in our marriage. In fact, we often talk about the fact of God's law of marriage. And Jesus, when he's asked a question back there in Matthew 19, and if you go up around verse 4, the question was earlier, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? Now, that's the background of this. But Jesus teaches a lot about marriage in these few verses right here. Starting in verse 4, he says, "Have you not read that he made them beginning, made them male and female? And said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." Now, if you stop right there, you just realize that's Genesis 2. That's what we had up there a few minutes ago. So he goes all the way, bypasses the law of Moses altogether, and just goes right back to God's intention. And so he says, so then, verse 6, so then there are no longer two but one flesh. Therefore, what God's joined together, let not man separate. And so we have here is a relationship where God joins them or binds them together. And somebody said, well, what does that really mean? And what that means is there is a covenant relationship. There is a law. And that when you get married, that you are bound by that law, God's law, to do what God says. In Romans 7th chapter, in verse 2, starting off here, it says, "For the woman which hath a husband is bound by the law." Now, I submit to you that the idea of Jesus in Matthew 19, verse 6, and here Romans 7, verse 2, he's not talking about the law of man. I'm going to show you that in a few minutes. But he's talking here about the law of God. That God's law binds them together through her husband so long as he liveth. But the husband be dead, she is released from the law of her husband. Okay, so they're bound by the law here in this relationship. There's a binding by God. And therefore, it's kind of a way of depicting this here is that you have God's law here. And again, the man and woman down here, they're the ones that enter a physical relationship. They're the ones that at the ceremony we see. But often we talk about God involving us here. And what we see is that when we say I do's, and we have all these conditions that we talk about, do you promise to stay with this person for better, worse, richer, poorer, till death do you part, and maybe a few other things added in there. What we're talking about there are principles taught in God's law, and we say yes. And God says, I'm holding you responsible for that, and therefore you have obligations, you're restrained from this. And among the obligations, they're going to live together, you're going to work together, and restraints is nobody else going to be a part of your marriage, and you're going to be faithful to each other. And so he said, now that's what we have in this relationship. And so if the man won't decide to get a divorce, well, God's law still binds them together. And that's another lesson altogether, but I just want to make that point there, that God's law, we're bound by God's law, no matter what man says, we're bound by God's law. Now, I also want to point out, there is a difference in scriptural marriage and unscriptural marriage. And as an unscriptural marriage, I said earlier about this idea of being married and maybe not supposed to be married. Here in Mark 6, verse 17, it said, "But Herod himself had sent and laid hold of John, and bound him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, for he had married her." Now notice here, the problem we have in this passage is pretty obvious, isn't it? And as we have two marriages talked about. And that is, the Herodias had married this Herod's brother Philip's wife. Now apparently, according to Roman law, they had gotten a divorce. And so Herod here goes and marries her. Now, I submit to you that that's unscriptural marriage. In fact, I know it is because if you go down to the very next verse, where John is saying here, it's not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. Again, he's referring to God's law here. And so while they may have been married, he had married her, gone through the process, whatever it was Roman law required. And they were living together. He said, it's not lawful. It's not according to God's law. God has not bound you together. You're unbound because the reason is because she'll still bear on to Philip. Still by the law, she's still bound. By God's law, still bound to him. So there's a difference between a scriptural marriage and an unscriptural marriage. And to keep in mind, that's too dark. You can't read that. But what it says there, Herod and Herodias had married or married but not bound by God's law. Okay, so that's the situation we have right there. Now also what you say about marriage is that marriage is a relationship, and so maybe a way of kind of depicting that is that you have Herod and Herodias, they were married, they were in a physical relationship, but you notice here, really what I should have is Herodias here still being bound by God's law or somebody else. But they weren't bound to each other by God's law because it's unscriptural marriage. But then also, as you look at this, one other thing to say about this then is that marriage is a relationship designed in at the death of the spouse. That's the way God designed this. I always think about the idea of the eagle. I've always heard of the eagles, when they take a mate, that's their mate for life. They don't go to another eagle's nest. They stay right where they're at. And here you have the same thing about God's attention for us. It's not to be a relationship that you enter into and then you decide after a while to get out and go somebody else and then go somebody else after that. No, it's a one-to-one relationship. And so again, God's law, according to Matthew 19, verse 4 through 6, that they are bound to each other. In a way of depicting that, I've always seen this in magazines and for many years, and so here it is on this chart. But it's kind of like you have this yoke, and that yoke there is God's law, and they're both bound to each other by the law to God and to each other. And that obligates them to each other. Leave and cleave. They're to leave mom and dad and cleave to each other, restrain from any other person and from a sexual relation with another person, according to Romans 7, verse 2 and 3. In fact, let's look back at that passage. We read verse 2, for the woman which had the husband is bound by the law to her husband as long, so long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is released from the law of her husband. So then, and while her husband liveth, she be married to another man. In other words, she leaves him, he's still alive, she goes out and marries somebody else, they said, she should be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she has been married to another man. So if you just kind of take this part here, is that if a husband be dead and she marries somebody else, she's free from that law, so that she marries, she's no adulteress, though she be married to another man. She's not obligated to law because the spouse is dead now. They're not bound to each other anymore. And so the idea again is that death ends that marriage. Another way of looking at that is 1 Corinthians 7 verse 39. It says the wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. Again, that's talking about God's law. And it goes on and says, but if her husband dies, she has liberty married to whom she wishes, only the Lord. And so again, the marriage bond ends at the point of death. That's the point of all this. Now, as you look at that, maybe a couple of questions come up as far as who can enter to a marriage then. Who can actually enter a marriage? And let me just point out three classes of people. And I say this, and especially to our young people, let me just point this out to be obvious about everything, that before you start dating, you need to make sure that person has the right to be dating. You need to make sure that person is not married, not bound to somebody else. Because a lot of times what happens, people start entering a dating process, and the dating's a way by which we choose our spouses, isn't it? And what happens is they start getting attached, then realize, you know, they're dating somebody they don't have the right to be dating. That person's bound to somebody else. Don't do that. And so here's why I would say here. First of all, a man and woman have never been married before. Every person has a right to enter into a marriage. God sanctions that marriage. And they're not bound to anybody else. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and she shall become one flesh. Jesus says, Matthew 19, verse 5. And so you have two people, again, you have two babies, you go to the hospital, you look at those babies in the hospital, then you realize every person there has the right to get married eventually. Okay? Because, again, they're not bound to anybody else. A second is, a person's spouse has passed away. Again, that's the reason, because according to Romans 7, verse 2 and 3, we read there earlier that if a husband be dead, she is released from the law of her husband, so that she is no adulteress, though she has married another man. So if your spouse dies, you have the right to go out and get married to somebody else. Again, provide the other person has the right to be married. Maybe the other person never been married before, or maybe that person's spouse has passed away. That would be, you know, both those would be allowed. And a third one here, which we really are not concentrating on much in this lesson right here, but 1 Corinthians 7, verse 39, again, a wife's bound by law as long as her husband lives, but if her husband dies, she's at liberty to be married to him she wishes, only the Lord. And so again, in that case, they're allowing her to do that. Now, the third is a person put away the spouse for the cause of fornication, according to Matthew 19, verse 9. And then as verse 9 says, and I say to you, whoever divorces a wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her is divorced commits adultery. Now, if you take out the exception, this is a real easy passage to read, isn't it? In fact, I maintain to you this passage really is pretty easy passage even with the exception, but let's just take that for a minute. And it says, I say to whoever divorces a wife, take out the exception, commits adultery. Whoever marries her is divorced commits adultery. So we have a couple here. They get a divorce. He likes to play video games all the time. She likes to go shopping all the time. They can't get along. They get divorced. You know, if he goes out and marries somebody else, he commits adultery. She goes out and marries somebody else, she commits adultery. That's pretty easy, isn't it? Now here's the exception. Except for sexual morality and marriage another. That is, this one person and the marriage is unfaithful. Then the person is not, or the person has been faithful, has not been unfaithful, if that makes any sense. That person then has the right to go out and marry somebody else. And so, again, you have A and B, and B commits adultery, then A has the right to go out and marry somebody else. And so that's the law as far as God says in this case. Now, they have the right to reconcile, according to 1 Corinthians 7th chapter, they have the right to reconcile back to each other, that one can forgive the other person. But if the case of innocent person, the marriage covenant bond is broken if they decide to divorce and go marry somebody else or to get a divorce. So that's, again, pretty simple on this here. Now, let me just end this lesson by saying, hopefully none of this has been controversial. I don't think any of this has been very controversial. But we have to keep it. The problem a lot of times is with marriage, when you start talking about this issue, a number of things. One is, man's trying to redefine the sin in Matthew 19:9. Trying to redefine marriage, trying to redefine what the sin actually is. Somebody trying to redefine the sin as actually going and filing for divorce and take the sexual part totally out of it. Some have tried to redefine the sin and say, well, the sin is simply breaking your covenant. That's it. Some have tried to redefine repentance. Repentance is, I say I'm sorry and I stay with the person I'm met with now. They try to redefine it that way. And repentance demands a change. If the relationship is wrong, then you cannot stay in the relationship. And I've used this illustration many, many years ago. But I really don't know if it still has the impact today that it did back then. As I was talking to two people, and they had both been married numerous times before, no adultery involved as far as, if anything, they were the guilty spouses. And I just asked, I said, could somebody be homosexual, stay in a homosexual relationship? Now, there used to be, everybody would say, well, no, they can't. I'm not sure that really works today as far as society, but we understand the point. If it's a sin, you can't keep on committing the sin. And the other two problems is, one, somebody tried to redefine what it means to divorce or put away their spouse, what that really means. And the other one, that are related here, others have tried to change the order of the divorce and fornication in Matthew 19:9. They try to do that. And we're going to talk about those two here specifically more next week, is what I want to do. But so I just kind of tell you where we're headed. But again, God's law in marriage is very simple. We have to make it complicated. But I know man generally does that. Man, sometimes we just take the simplest things, we can make it hard. And the bulletin this morning, some of you came in early and knew that the bulletin wasn't out there. And it's really easy to print out the bulletin. However, I made it hard. I had the wrong date on it. I had the wrong people on the serving, the Lord's table, and singing, and everything like that. I had the right article in it. Part was right, but most was wrong. And so I had to redo it. Well, that's what man tends to do with marriage sometimes, kind of change it, just make it hard. The same thing about salvation. Being saved really in a lot of ways is easy. It's easy to understand who Jesus is. Jesus is the Son of God. And it's easy to understand the idea of believing who he is, accepting who he is, his authority. It's easy to understand what it means to confess Christ, say that he's Son of God. It's easy to understand what repentance means, change your life. It's easy to get baptized. However, how many times have people had problems with the order of things, changing the order around or trying to redefine those things? It's easy as long as we let the Bible be the Bible and somebody do what it says. So this morning, if you need to respond to the invitation, that's all we have selected for us.